Jim Sparks, we're delighted to be talking with you today. I'm Bill Ryan. I'm half of the team with Kerry Cassidy, that's Project Camelot. And one of the things that we do is we present different jigsaw puzzle pieces of what is a very large picture that a lot of people out there watching this video now will be as interested in putting together as you are and we are.
Okay.
Now, we're talking to you today because from what we understand, you have one or two possibly significant pieces to present to people so that they can fit it into the puzzle if they can, and so that we can fit it into the puzzle if we can. We're speaking to you because you are what has been described in the UFO community as a fully conscious multiple abductee. That's the shortest sentence I can fit all that in.
Good way to put it.
Could you put your own a description onto that? What do you feel your contribution to this puzzle is?
In brief.
In brief.
Interaction has been going on for approximately 19 years. The first 6 years were ambiguous, no frame of reference, couldn't understand. I would say that would be akin to what most abductees go through, except, again, it was 95 to 98% total conscious recall that I come with.
At a guess, how many abductions have you experienced?
Hundreds.
Hundreds?
Hundreds.
Many hundreds. That's
many
a lot.
Hundreds.
That's
many
a
hundreds.
Lot. Would you say, once again, in your experience, that this is likely to have been exceptional, or are many abductees also have experienced hundreds of abductions, but they don't remember any of them? Is this possible?
Part of the latter is there's a lot of truth based on that, because I've seen mass abductions with hundreds of people. And in those mass abductions, these people, the memory's taken away towards the end. Primarily, in the mass abductions that I've seen, they're primarily involved the what are commonly referred to as grays. They're getting environmental lessons. That's over a 19-year period.
What do you mean environmental lessons? What do you mean by that?
An awareness of the acute situation we're in with the environment. Primarily what they do in these abduction scenarios, particularly the mass ones, with this particular agenda, which is global, is to heighten the awareness of how beautiful the planet is and how beautiful the planet was by different sorts of frames of pictures for them to get. And then they gradually turn sour as to what we're doing to the planet. They're informed that the planet is dying. And I believe they're also getting, as what I know I've gotten, an assignment, so to speak. You don't have to do it. They receive this assignment in the subconscious and in the conscious frame of mind. The conscious frame memory is taken away before they go back. I think it'll reach the point of critical mass globally with this message, whereas as they go around their normal life, some may have fragmented memories of the abduction, some may not have any at all. We're talking tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or maybe even into the millions or more people globally.
Globally.
Globally. But it'll get to the point where it's critical mass, where the timing, if the timing's just perfect, I think a lot more memory will start coming out as to what they're supposed to do. So there seems to be a drive with abductees.
Is this part of a long-term program?
Yes.
A major long-term program?
Yes. One particular agenda, yes.
And the agenda, this is just my clarification of what you're saying. The agenda is an educational one, except that they have a particular style of teaching that may not be like the kind of thing we'd want to put our own kids
through. It's no doubt teaching, but it's not a teaching lesson. It's actually to take action. And see, now I've seen this flower in myself with consciousness of what's going on. I've seen this flower in an individual that I happened to see and interact with intimately on board for a couple hours, and then seeing this individual here at home over the years, getting this environmental message the way the rest of them did, not commenting on, I know who he is, and we befriended each other, and I can go on with that.
Yeah.
But we're friends.
And
but
even though he had no memory of his experience, you kept quiet about it, noticing what had happened,
mm-hmm.
and then you saw him change his attitudes, change his behavior, start to take action with certain projects.
Absolutely.
You saw, which
Absolutely.
Was exactly what their program was designed
exactly.
for.
Exactly. And then, interestingly enough, there were innuendos throughout the early stages of our interaction here, where he did share with me, I remember this, or I got this, or he had fragmented memories like most abductees, and I had to bite my tongue knowing who the person was. Well, now he knows who I am, and it's fully bloomed. So that is a major agenda. Now, for me personally, as most abductees, but it was a six-year period of living hell because I didn't have a frame of reference. I didn't understand what was going on. They didn't make anything clear. So I don't want to say I was trained. I haven't found the proper word for it. Kind of like an alien boot camp. I'm not going to go into
long. Indoctrinated? Would that be?
That would be, yes. So you know how to behave.
Okay.
And bottom line, because you're dealing with creatures that are non-human intelligence. Mm. And they're 10 to 100 times faster than the mind. They got the high technology. They can travel time. They can go across, span the universe with no time passing. They can work with other dimensions. And these people or beings are so far removed from what we are, particularly socially, and they definitely don't have any social skills as far as we're concerned. They traumatize you. Interaction is trauma in every way, shape, and form. It's a better thing that the memory's taken away from people, and maybe it comes back to them slowly so they can cope and deal with it. But in that first 6 years, it was ambiguity, paradox, learning symbols, and the point there is I had no frame of reference or understood what was going on. Mm-hmm. The second set of 6 years, 7 years, was when I was turned loose on board, where I got to see agendas. And now I knew how to behave. Mm-hmm. A, I wasn't going to kill them. B, I wasn't going to go around tearing up the ship. C, I wasn't going to be disruptive. I wasn't going to, as I was those first 6 years. Mm-hmm. If I was paralyzed for the most part. So now I got to see things that they were doing.
This is very strange because it's like after this time, after you had been a rebel in their terms, it's like you didn't want to cooperate. You were yelling and screaming at them. You were angry. You were outraged that these things were happening to you against your will. But then they seem to take you into their confidence almost to help them with their program. I mean, this is a paradox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was necessary. I mean, you really... I'm not justifying them. I don't claim, and you've heard me say this before, and I'm going to say it now, I don't claim to embrace alien culture. I have a healthy suspicion of all their motives at all times. I don't just swallow it and say that's how it is, but I let it play itself out. That's the only wise thing to do. What I'm finding is it is playing itself out, and I am seeing signs, and they are positive. They're not negative.
Would it be fair, then, to describe this as it's a kind of positive brainwashing? That's my take on what you seem to be having. And once again, that's a paradox as well, because one doesn't really associate the term brainwashing as being anything positive at all.
Of course.
But there is something about this being against people's free will.
Right.
The intention seems to be positive, because mm-hmm. the idea is to shock or push people into taking more responsibility for our planet and our environment than we have been doing. Mm-hmm. Is this just because they're purely altruistic, or is there some self-interest involved?
Well, there's definitely self-interest, and there's definitely beneficial to us. But addressing the brainwashing aspect of it, clearly it's there. Clearly it's forced upon one. Now, that's something that took me several years to grasp why it had to be that way, because they are so far removed from what we are. We're talking about species of non-human intelligence that are literally thousands of years, in some cases, ahead of us technically, thousands of years ahead of already figuring things out and who have evolved. They've joined, so to speak, the galactic neighborhood. They've conquered things like death. Some of them have. Their lifespans are phenomenal. And I think it's also transformed physically as that wears out to another body form.
That's what we've
They
heard.
Have yeah. many thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years of experience in a data bank, in their minds. Mm. It's cohesive. It's practical. It works as a group. And when you have something like that that has something in mind, you're killing your planet, and it sees a problem with time.
Is it our planet or is it their planet?
There are some things there that are hard to swallow that I didn't enjoy, because I used to scream in those early years, why me, why me, why me, why me, and I didn't get an answer, and it took them finally years to do it. And bottom line is, grays in this particular species, I'm not speaking for all of them, very close to the face that I saw here earlier, claim to have genetically altered these monk ape-like creatures, which I've seen, in a holographic form, not in the physical. And they've it's the time thing that's neat too, but they took frames of certain time periods, and I got to see what it was like, perhaps maybe a few million years ago, maybe a few hundred thousand years ago, and these ape-like creatures that don't quite look like a monkey, don't quite look like a person, they claim they genetically altered to make us what we are today.
Are you saying that you experience this a bit like a Star Trek holodeck, like a kind
no.
of, like you're in there?
No.
No. Okay, okay, sorry. Just no. explain how it was it also
excuse,
to you.
Excuse me. What we would commonly refer to as like a computer image only projected out in like a hologram. Mm. So you would see it in a frame. And it was many of these hologram type frames, square frame, that would hang in the air of, I've seen many, many thousands of these frames during these experiences.
Okay. So it's like three-dimensional widescreen TV with, and you're right in front of it?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And then, and depending on how significant it is, brings in dimension. Now I'm getting into a detailed aspect. Mm-hmm. If it's two-dimensional, it can almost be like a flat thing, like as if it was a sketch. Mm. But sketched, snapshot sketch. Mm. If it had significance or more importance, then it took on some depth. But these ape-like things, according to them, they claim that they genetically manipulated to make us what we are today, which is a part of them, according
right.
to them, and a part of what's naturally here.
Okay, so we've been gene-spliced with them.
If you want to say gene splice, how exactly they do it?
I don't even know that's a technical term.
I think, you know, one day that'll come out, and I kind of have a suspicion on how, but nonetheless,
okay.
I know it's contrary to religion, philosophy, and things of that nature, so that's why I say I was actually very angry for many years over that, but I'm not anymore. That gives them a sense, a right, I don't want to say of ownership, there's not exact word, there's a responsibility there, even though I'm not very proud of their record as far as being invisible, interaction with us, ambiguous, not knowing what they are, keeping themselves hidden. And if you look at things like the Holocaust and things of that nature and atomic explosions and what we've been doing, war after war, you would think, well, they're not really taking well responsibility. Well, I know better now.
Okay.
I know better now. I understand why.
There's a book that you wrote called The Keepers.
Correct.
Why did you call it The Keepers?
Well, it was initially going to be called Star People. For years, on those early years, I wanted to know who they were. And they don't like to answer questions for various different reasons. There was a time that I got, what struck me with the Star People thing was, in the early years, I would make symbols, and I would have to do exercises, and they would extract semen, they'd do all this traumatic stuff, and I was a good laboratory mouse. There would be reward sessions. It was punishment reward, where I could get questions answered. There was a time where I knew I had done particularly well, and it was in those early years, so I got to ask a question, and I knew I was going to get an answer. So
this was your reward, to be able to ask a question?
Yes.
Okay, go on.
And my question was, who the hell, you know, who are you? And the response was, Star People. Now, I did not like that answer as a person, because I felt like, what do you think, I'm a monkey and I'm an idiot? You know, Star People, what are you saying? You know, that sounds like something from 1950s science fiction. Yeah, Star People. But interesting enough about this intelligence is some of the answers, or most of the answers, are so simple and to the point that it's hard as a human being to accept something simple.
Yeah. I think I'm with you here. The key word there is people.
People.
Yeah.
People.
People.
So, Star People. So, I understood what they meant. They considered themselves people, and when they first told me that, I got on their butts hard.
Right.
Because I'm a people, you're not a people. You're a people, yeah. You're a people. You're not, how dare you call yourself a people. Mm. But over time, I started breaking down the meaning that, yes, they're from the stars, they consider themselves to be people, or persons, or beings, but they just use the term people. Mm. And they travel time, they travel dimension, they've been doing this for tens of thousands of years, so there's no real base for them anymore, so to speak. Not to say that there's something wrong with that, it was a perfect answer. Okay, now, something profound happened to change it to the keepers. Mm-hmm. I was traveling from Naples, Florida to Fort Myers Beach, where I was living in Fort Myers Beach at the time. And halfway through that route, I saw something just phenomenal, which is not unusual for the technology they have, but I saw a craft that looked like a sailboat, meaning that I saw a sail, and it was going across the road about half a mile or three quarters of a mile from me. Now, I lived in an area at that time where there's water, and it's not uncommon for there to be a sailboat. And as I was watching the sail, and as I'm driving down the road, and I'm watching the sail go across the road, I then realized, I know this part of the area. There's no water here. There's no bridge here. And I'm looking at something as if it was just paved. It was like it's just going through the road. Well, it was the top of what I call a diamond-shaped ship, which is like a pyramid on the top. Yeah. So, again, the laws of physics, as we don't understand it, don't apply. That's why some of these things seem to pass through solid matter. There's reports that they fly into volcanoes. There's and all of these things, nature. They create a field. They can do this. Okay, so that's going to get your attention. When I saw that what it was, it then lifted itself up from the road into the sky. It was huge, quiet. You couldn't hear a thing, and it was hanging there. And I'm looking at this thing, and then the telepathic message was very distinct and very clear. It said, the keepers, and I never came up with the keepers are here to take their people home to a better place. Now, as that was being said, the image beamed in my head very clearly, because they do these kind of things. They can transmit thought, transmit vision. I saw inside what looked like almost like an atrium of them collecting every conceivable seed you can imagine of life. Semen, ova, plant seeds, animal extractions, blood, and all categorized and all put in high-tech way. So they're collecting this stuff. Now, what did that mean to take their people home to a better place? They refer to themselves, though, however, distinctly and clearly as the keepers. Now, what I take that ship to be, and over the years, is something like a beacon ship, meaning that in the cosmos, there is a galactic neighborhood, and they don't fight each other in general. It's telepathic. Even if you have one agenda, they have another agenda. Now, we're talking about evolved. You, in your journeys as a species, let's say you're a gray, and let's say I'll be the human being in this case. In my journeys in the cosmos, we may come across the path of a ship that we don't know what it's doing. So when that particular ship, which is like a robot ship, so to speak, when it picks up an approach by something that may be part of what it's doing or not what it's doing, it identifies itself. Mm-hmm. And as it identifies itself, then the occupants of that particular craft, and it may be a different species, know, hey, this is a collection ship. This is an automated medical ship. This is one collecting samples doing this. So they know what it is, and they go on their way.
Yep.
So when I came across this thing, what I'm realizing as time has gone by, is it picked something up on me because of interaction with these grays. For 19 years, I've always said there's a residual effect of being around them, the technology, the field, something I radiate, something as abductees may, something that you may.
Yeah.
It picked up me as, it didn't know what I was in a sense.
But they routinely identified themselves to you.
Right.
Fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they called themselves the Keepers. Now, interestingly enough, this is why I named the book The Keepers, interestingly enough, was that event triggered 3 weeks of many abductions and following sightings in a phenomenal way with other individuals and strangers that I didn't even know. So that really struck me well, because one thing about this business, if you want to call it a business, is it's hearsay when it comes to, let's be real, it's
you
hearsay.
You can't prove a damn thing.
Right.
Yeah.
However, when you're walking down the beach, and that same thing appears in the sky, and there's many people around you, and it's the size of three houses, and it's not making a sound, and it's over the water, and people are jumping up and down in excitement, others are scared. All of that took place in several other experiences within a three-week period. So the name stuck with me because of the events that followed and that direct the Keepers. So it referred itself as the Keepers.
It's very striking and very appropriate. Where is this going, and is their program on track?
Mm-hmm.
From their point of view, if you were their program manager, would you feel, okay, we're doing all right here, or do you think that the Spaniards in trouble and they're really having to force the issue to get whatever it is that they want accomplished from this? What's your take on whether this is working for them?
In general, and not to be somewhat specific and not too vague, but somewhat specific.
What's your feeling about where this is going?
And why? Why, okay. You've got, again, creatures or non-human intelligent beings who, again, are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years ahead, where they would be, so to speak, socially and how they behave and have been relative to where we are. They have technology that can take them to the past, that can take them to the future. What I'm getting in general is that we do reach a point, because I don't like to be the one that says gloom and doom and this and that, okay? Claiming the end of the world, I stay away from.
But you're also a very honest man in terms of reporting what it is that you've perceived.
We do evolve.
Okay.
As a species. We do conquer a lot of things, particularly diet. We do use the tools for time travel. We do span the cosmos to get from point A to point B without time passing. We do. The good news is we do evolve. The unfortunate news is that only but a handful of us survive it before we repopulate and evolve.
Survive what?
Well, I would suspect very strongly that since the emphasis on almost every ET non-human intelligent race and species is on our environment, I suspect something bad's going to happen there. Mm-hmm. However, the push from the future to now is to have all 6 billion of us, so at that point close to 8 billion of us, survive and evolve into the future and into the galactic neighborhood. Can be changed.
At what point? You say at that point, 8 billion. What point?
What point in what respect?
Is there a year, do you mean, or at a stage?
Okay, here's a very wise thing.
Okay,
a very, very wise thing. And this comes from personal experience, and this comes from me seeing the way these guys are, so to speak. There's nothing worse, and I am not religious, and I'm not going to somewhere. There's nothing worse than a false prophet, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Even though there's someone who has seen the future, and I have, and the way they portrayed it is in ways that I can't tell when and what time it is. Even in it's a paradox, but now I'm understanding that in the first few years of this, I would always get the holograms of a different time and place, not comprehending what I'm seeing. Mm. Now, 18, 19 years later, I realize that I couldn't know what I was seeing and when, because I would have interfered with it. I would have gotten its way. I would have gotten my own way with what my place is in this thing and other abductees and so forth.
We want to take a responsible stance in informing people with the best data available from people's testimony, so that those who can hear will hear, those who can't hear won't hear whatever we do, and some people will be able, for them, that will be the prompt for them to take responsible action.
Okay.
We're not catastrophists, we're not doom-mongers, we're not
right.
trying to scare anybody.
Right.
We're right with you. We want all of humanity to make it all the way through. But if there's anyone watching this video now that says, my God, you know what? I think I better pay attention to things I haven't been paying attention to before, then we will have done our job.
Well, I do know I do know what to do
in
the early aspects of this thing. Two things. One is amnesty. Now, this is not coming from Jim Sparks.
Hmm.
This is coming from interaction with these beings over many years. Amnesty meaning that there are agencies, either being sanctioned or not sanctioned, commonly referred to as black ops, secret governments, secret clubs, call them whatever you might want, who have contractual interaction, human beings, with non-human intelligent species and groups who have developed in line with these creatures technologies like free energy. I don't want to sound like a simpleton here, okay? I'm not saying let's all hold hands and buy each other Coca-Cola and the world's beautiful and we're at peace and let's all sing a song together. I want to be as practical as possible. There's nothing wrong with that, but I want to be practical. There are technologies that will change the face of this planet as we know it. And for the first time in the history of the human species, we will be able to evolve. The problem that the species has, and I know I see it in your eye, is that we rely too much on outward influence or outside sources to save us. As a species, we have a very difficult time looking inward to ourselves and saying, it's not going to be God that does it for us. It's not going to be, I'm not saying there's no God. I'm not saying it's not going to be the Great Spirit that's going to do it for us. It's not going to be all these outside forces. It's us facing ourselves for the first time and doing these things ourselves to join the galactic neighborhood.
We have to be adults and clean up our own house.
We have to do it. Now, there's technologies out there that exist that are secret. Free energy, where we don't have to derive so much from our environment. And these technologies are in the possession of these black op secret organizations who, in their view and in their eyes, sanctioned or not, most of them are sanctioned, that they're doing this for the defense and the security of our nation and other free nations and other nations. I'm not just being selfish and saying the United States, but we're up there pretty much to the top with this stuff, okay? And these things need to be cut loose because we do have the global warming. We do have problems with the rainforest. We do have a problem with pollution in the ocean. And I can go on and on with our environmental woes. So these things need to be freed up. Now, in the eyes of these beings that are extremely intelligent and have a lot of experience, have made something very clear. Create an amnesty vehicle where, because there is a growing majority in this black op or secret government stuff that wants to come forward with this information and these technologies. Quite frankly, they don't want to die bringing it forward. They don't want to be executed. They don't want to be charged. Because unfortunately, people have been discredited, murdered, maimed for the sake of national security. Innocent, law-abiding citizens. Many over the last particularly 40 to 60 years, 50 to 60 years. Them coming forward in any way, shape, or form. Let's be practical here. Oh, you're responsible for my father's death. Oh, you're responsible for my aunt's death. Oh, you're responsible for this and this and that, because all that stuff's going to have to come out with it. These people can't be touched. They're going to have to be able to, they're going to have a vehicle to come forward 100%. And I hate to use the word forgived, but have to be forgived and forgotten. So these technologies can come out to save us and aid in saving us from what we're doing to this planet. Now, one hands-on project that is particularly, it's an assignment for me and others, but for myself, is a rainforest project. Now, why do I say the rainforest? It's the lungs of the planet. It's the internal organs of the planet. It's how she's able to cleanse and recycle herself. And we've done a lot of damage to her. And now we're injuring the internal organs. Global warming is just a part of it. But the rainforest is extremely important because it's something that we can see. We can see it regress or digress, and we can see it expand and come back out again and healthy. A hands-on project with that on a global basis, in short, where we can really see what we're doing, where the whole world gets involved, is something that needs to be accomplished. Once it's accomplished, then we can all know on this globe that there is something we can do as a species, as a whole, all 6 billion of us, or whoever many get involved, to actually change something so extreme as to where we're going, which will make it easier to tackle these other challenges. Now, as a species, when they fly by and they look down at us, what they see is a hornet's nest. You have hornets that live a very short lifespan. You have hornets that are eating and killing each other. You have hornets that are fighting each other. And you're looking at hornets that cannot get their act together and never have.
And they don't seem to care a damn about the nest.
And they don't understand. So the hornets have to face themselves. Not that they're not willing to aid. Remember, these people, these beings, these things, and this is a strong point I'm making here, have been, for tens of thousands of years, if not hundreds of thousands, intervene in every way, shape, or form to bring us to evolving. What has been determined? Everything under the book has been tried, under the sun, under the stars, and we're still the same. It's our nature.
Yeah.
We have to do it ourselves.
Is the future set, or are we only talking about probabilities?
If you let the river run, it'll run its course, and it's set. You can change the course of a river. But what I've learned over the years is, and I've discussed this with you on the side, that the I'm learning as I go, the butterfly theory couldn't be any more the opposite. Time, if you put time in a river sense, which is more ambiguous and complex than that, but if you put it in the sense of a strong flowing river, in order to alter a very mighty and powerful river that's going to run its course and you know where it's going to go, it takes a tremendous amount of energy to make the slightest change. Mm-hmm. So if you let the river go, naturally, the flow of time will keep going.
Where's the river headed right now?
Well, it's not a straight line.
Okay, good answer. But is it heading in a general direction? Are you optimistic?
I know I'm optimistic about the part, as I said earlier, that a handful relative to the population of on the planet now survive all the upcoming environmental garbage. Only but a handful, relatively speaking. And then past that, we evolve and repopulate. Now, I know the technology. I'm not saying I claim I can build a time machine, but I've seen the technology several times more than once and experienced the technology several times more than once in many different ways, face to face, of us, even us, coming back from the future in my face. It's amazing how this thing has evolved from horror the first 6 years to an interaction that's fantastic. However, and it's the same thing. Yeah, we make it, but not all of us do before we get there. What do we want to see? We want to see all of us, if not most of us, at least get past that point. This is a very hard thing to do because, A, it's hard to change the river of time. It's strong, it's resilient, it wants to snap back. Time once set, wants to stay there. But it can be. So unfortunately, we're on a pretty screwed up course, which is self-destruction with our planet.
Have you been shown a possible future or a probable future as some kind of a warning? It's like, you know, this is where we're headed if we don't change this river. Have you been shown something like this?
Well, without going into great detail.
Something that
after we evolve, I think is where I want to go right now, which is as we understand things now, as we see things now, it's fantastic. We can't just sit back and say, oh gee, we do evolve because we repopulate again and regroup and so forth. The push is to get us to bring most of us, if not all of us, there.
So it gets worse before it gets better, and we've got to rise to the challenge.
It will. Oh, absolutely, it will. But when it will and how it will, it almost doesn't take much of imagination. Mm. You know, if you start looking at CO2 levels, if you start seeing where the rainforest is, if you start seeing, I can go on and on with the environmental things. What's going to, the way out is the fact that we have the brain power, we have the raw resources, we have the technologies. They're hidden from us, and for very good reason, for the most part. But from where we're at right now, these things need to come out. And they need to come out to change the face of the earth as we know it.
What's the one message that you would like to leave viewers with? If you were in a position to say something that everyone would remember, or take note of, or act upon, what would that be?
Look within yourself and really, really see where we're at. Vision in your mind, vision in your heart, vision in your soul, the globe. Vision all of us on it. See us as a species evolved. And then think in your mind from where you're at now to where you see us evolved with all the wonderful things that I just said, what steps should be taken to get us there or to get me there? And how can I participate in bringing us there as a species.
We've got a little piece of videotape here, which we recorded just a short while ago from somebody who obtained a model of a grey. We would like to know your reactions to this, and this is unprepared, this is live, these are your spontaneous reactions. Mm-hmm. And just give us your live responses.
For starters, we did have a phone conversation, speaking of the gentleman, Bill Holden, briefly, but in very vague detail. You described a little bit of background. I had asked you during that conversation, which was yesterday, what his interaction was in reality to extraterrestrials, as far as did he see any and things of that nature. On the phone, you mentioned to me yesterday that he had, but you didn't go into much detail, but that he was on Air Force One. I believe you said he was a steward. I also believe you said that, as I remember, that he had some interaction with President Kennedy. And as you mentioned also, that he, President Kennedy at the time said, admitted to him that he is aware of extraterrestrials and UFOs, and you didn't go into any detail past that. Then you mentioned briefly that Mr. Holden, his involvement had changed in the years. He had some sort of security clearance, and that you had pictures, perhaps, or he had experienced UFOs, the vehicles themselves, with aliens standing next to him. I had asked you then, so he could he describe what they looked like, or can you tell me what he told you? You then said to me something to the effect of he carries around with him a model, a head, that I think you said he found at a swamp meet or something like that, or
he basically picked it up
somewhere along the line,
sure.
Because it was picked very close to what he saw, right?
Yes, there are particular features on this model that he understands are accurate. This is his understanding. Because mm-hmm. of your unique experience, we'd mm-hmm. also love to run this past you. That's really...
See, this is an honest reaction, and I did see on the laptop that particular still version. One thing that stood out with me when we were having the phone conversation, which was exactly what you were about to say, which was he said it was a very close replica, but the nose and the mouth were a little more less defined on the ET versus that model. First thing I noticed when I sat down was this thing looks very, very close to a species that I've seen, very close, right up at the face.
Okay.
So I was my reaction to that at first was there's some authenticity here. Authenticity, I have a hard time with that word. And then as I look closer at it, and as I'm looking at it now, that's one of the first things. The nose is not right. The nose is a little too pronounced on this thing. Mm-hmm. And also how defined the mouth is, mm-hmm. it's different. Now, something that stands out with me when it comes to this particular species of gray, because it was a situation that really the face is so much in the way the face looked is in my mind and something I can't forget, that they have a leather-like texture to their faces, and you can see something akin to wrinkles, mm-hmm. which defines one individual from another, meaning that I've seen drone beings. And these drone beings are the short 3-foot ones, so more or less, huge heads, huge giant teardrop eyes, skinny necks, and so forth. And they're worker beings, and I believe them to be half biological and half robotic. They are just to perform tasks. Would it be artificial intelligence? I don't think so, because the biological aspect of it. Nonetheless, what I would call the true species or the true alien are the ones that govern. They're the taskmasters.
Sure.
This looks like a taskmaster. This looks like what I would call a true alien.
What Bill said was that there was a very unusual and pronounced musculature at the back of the head, and that for him was something that indicated to him that whoever it was who created this this little model knew exactly what they were doing, and either had some experience or some very accurate testimony to work from.
Too pronounced. I would say that it would be, see where it's ridged over here? What I'm seeing, that's, I'm not saying this is not authentic, I'm just saying what I know.
Of course.
This part here wouldn't be so indented, so pronounced here, mm-hmm. but it would be more, the contour would be more blended in, with the exception, what I'm enjoying about this is that these features here, where you're seeing these deep ridges, again, the face of a particular species that I'm seeing now and intimately had interaction with, there's a leather-like texture to the face. Mm-hmm. When it comes to this aspect of the head, it would be more refined ridges or more refined lines. But what I'm looking here, and it comes to mind, and I'm just telling you gut reaction, this looks like a model made from one that had been dead. That's just a gut reaction. I'm going to say, hey, that's how it is. But I'm pleased with the fact that it's not describing the typical face that's smooth, big eyes, the small thin lips, and they all look alike kind of thing. So what you're seeing here is obviously a creature that has pronounced, defined, independent features like you from me or me from you. Now the face, I'm impressed with the eyes. I've always said, if you read my work, if you in other interviews, whenever I've given talks, that what I would call a true alien, when I say I just separate it from the robotic beings when I say true, and that species, that the eyes are not nearly as big as the giant teardrop eyes as the worker beings, but they're certainly bigger than ours. So what I'm seeing here in the face are the eyes are very, very good as far as what I've seen. The nose is not proper, and I find that fascinating, again, that he had mentioned that to me, and the same with the mouth. And again, I'm seeing a texture on the face akin to the skin, with the wrinkles would be being more refined.
That's, Jim, okay. This is absolutely fine. Thank you so much. You're the definitive expert around here.
Oh, great.